On January 21, 2001, George W. Bush stood on the steps of the Capitol in a cold rain and took the oath of office. In his inaugural address, the new president made little reference to the world beyond America's borders, except to say, "The enemies of liberty and our country should make no mistake. America remains engaged in the world, by history and by choice, shaping a balance of power that favors freedom. We will defend our allies and our interests. We will show purpose without arrogance. We will meet aggression and bad faith with resolve and strength." The brevity of the passage was in keeping with the campaign, in which neither Bush nor his opponent, Al Gore, spent much time discussing foreign policy. Bush's national security team boasted an extraordinary amount of high-level experience, and its stars took their seats in the cabinet room amid high expectations. Vice President Dick Cheney had served as Secretary of Defense in the first Bush administration and White House Chief of Staff during the Ford administration. Colin Powell was on his way to compiling perhaps the most distinguished record in Washington since George C. Marshall. He had been National Security Advisor under President Reagan and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Now he was Secretary of State. Another former Chief of Staff for President Ford, a former congressman and a one-time ambassador to NATO, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld began a second tour in the office in which he had been the youngest incumbent ever in 1975. Only National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice was relatively inexperienced, having logged just 2 years as a Soviet expert on the Bush National Security Council staff. But she was, nonetheless, highly regarded by both Democrats and Republicans. The Bush team came into office with clear views about world affairs and a strong disdain for the policies of President Clinton. Their overriding criticism concerned what Condoleezza Rice called setting priorities, which required focusing on the few great powers that can radically affect international peace, stability, and prosperity. These states are capable of disruption on a grand scale, and their fits of anger or acts of beneficence affect hundreds of millions of people. By reason of size, geographic position, economic potential, and military strength, they are capable of influencing American welfare for good or ill. In an article in Foreign Affairs that was the foreign policy campaign manifesto for the Republicans, she argued that a foreign policy was required that separates the important from the trivial, and took the sitting administration to task for having assiduously avoided implementing such an agenda. Instead, every issue has been taken on its own terms, crisis by crisis, day by day. China and Russia, she argued, were what really counted, and Clinton had frittered away American power and prestige by attending to new second- or third-tier concerns that he had brought into office. Terrorism, she contended, needed attending to insofar as it was used by rogue states to advance their interests. In the months before the inauguration, George W. Bush and his advisers spoke about terrorism seldom and only generically. After the bombing of the Cole, Bush told an audience in the Philadelphia suburb of Langhorne, "Let's hope we can gather enough intelligence to figure out who did the act and take the necessary action. There must be a consequence." But when the president-elect's appointees came to the White House for transition briefings, the message they heard was anything but generic. Sandy Berger wanted the incoming team to be well-briefed, and he ordered issue papers to be written and oral presentations to be delivered to Condoleezza Rice by every directorate of the NSC. When Transnational Threats gave its review of why bin Laden is an existential threat, as one directorate member put it, Berger showed up unexpectedly. It was the only one of the briefings he attended. "I'm here," he explained, "because I want to underscore how important this issue is." Berger met with Rice several times to cover the waterfront of foreign policy. In the office that Berger was soon to hand over to the professor from Stanford, He tried to ensure that she grasped the seriousness of the threat. He told her, "You're going to spend more time during your 4 years on terrorism generally and Al-Qaeda specifically than any issue."